Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Big News Wednesday here at the Damage Report. I, as always, or at least usual, am John Iderola, but we're very lucky to be joined on this fine Wednesday by Rayvanna of Reactions fame. Rayvanna, how's it going?
Good. Good morning. Thanks for having me back on.
It's always great to talk to you. Always great to have you here. Excited to talk about some of the big political developments going on here in the US and around the world over the course of the next 90 minutes or so. We're gonna be talking about Russia, both the situation as it develops as well as the domestic reaction to it. We're gonna show you the sorts of people who get to go on and opine about these sorts of things. We're gonna give you the opinions of former presidents, lots of fun stuff there. And then a whole bunch of other news. Lots of important stuff going on in different parts of the country. Some of the stuff that I'm particularly interested in though, and I'm going to obligate you, the audience, to humor me as I always do. Are people paying attention to the news? If so, who and who not? So we've got some interesting polls there that I think are actually pretty consequential. We've got some absolutely insane political ads. We're gonna, maybe at the end of the show, we can do a little poll of which of the two political ads we're gonna show you is more, I almost swore, I'm gonna say badass. Okay, and that'll actually be quite appropriate to one of the ads that we're going to be playing for you. But there's a lot of fun stuff. There's burger fascism, there's everything. So everyone buckle up and hold on to your butts as we launch into this. And if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great before we launch into this. Rayvanna, you ready to go?
Very ready.
Okay, in that case, let's do it. It's been less than 2 days since it became clear that while a full-on war between Ukraine and Russia, we're not currently there yet, things are certainly developing in a not necessarily awesome direction. So Vladimir Putin earlier this week announced that he was going to be recognizing the independence of a couple of separatist-controlled areas of eastern Ukraine. In response, the Biden administration has outlined a whole bunch of new sanctions and all of that. Well, now there's the reaction to the reaction. So and to comment, we have Reactions on. So Vladimir Putin has announced that because of those new sanctions, he warned that Americans will fully feel the quote consequences, which I'm gonna say best case scenario is an allusion to increased fuel prices. I'm assuming it can mean other things potentially too, but that's basically the best one from our point of view. And in addition to some of the rhetoric coming out of Russia, we also have the Ukrainian response to what's going on, with their government moving to introduce a 30-day state of emergency, which calls up military reservists between the age of 18 and 60 and allows ordinary civilians to carry firearms. So under this state of emergency, they've finally reached regular Texas state of affairs. And there's more, and we'll get to it. But Rayvanna, this is the first that you and I are talking about this situation. What do you make of the developments that have been going on throughout the week?
Yeah, well, first, 18 through 60 was a little bit shocking to me. That seems broad. Like a pretty wide range.
Broad.
What some of those people's function would be if there is an all out war at their advanced age. But I think that it's been hard to parse out the news that's coming out about it from what is just war drum beating and what is just apologia for Russia. And honestly, I've been trying to disassociate a little bit and focus on law school because I've just been struggling to find, good news sources outside of TYT, of course. I just feel for the people in Ukraine mostly. It's a really difficult situation. It's sad, especially, 18 through 60-year-old reservists. That's mobilization. It feels like it's got to be a scary moment for them. And I think a lot of people discuss this issue and sort of ignore the human aspect of it and the potential human cost of it. And I think that's just not a good way to look at it. It is a very sad situation for them. And I think that it's a better lens to view it through.
Yeah. No, I certainly agree. And look, we're, especially those of us in this sort of field, we're obligated to try to understand, push through all of the apologia and the propaganda and all of that to try to understand why the things that are happening are happening, to try to predict what will happen. I, in this case, predicted wrong. I didn't think they'd actually move into Ukraine. But anyway, And look, all of the potential explanations are in a variety of ways horrible and really have nothing to do with regular people's lives ever, you know, moving in the direction of being better. But you are right. This is going to be devastating for them. However, just briefly, let's touch on this. So there's like you said that you're sort of backing off a little bit. You're focusing on law school. I'm probably going to purchase Elden Ring and just totally check out for like a solid 3 weeks.
As you
the
should.
The reason is I probably will because here, let me. I'm a human. I'm going to be Twitter for a second. So right there, Ravana said you feel bad for the people of Ukraine. Why do you feel bad for the people of Ukraine? Are you implying that this isn't what they want? Are you saying that Russia's wrong to want? Oh, they're Ukrainians now, huh? Okay, CIA identifying them as Ukrainians. They haven't been Ukrainian since before 2014. And honestly, there's a great Middle Ages argument to be made. That's the sort of BS that you have to wade through. I saw a tweet from the Gravel Institute that was like, it's horrible that this war looks like it's gonna happen. And people, like tons of people were attacking them for being warmongers.
Yes.
It was literally, let's not have a war, warmonger. And like, honestly, if I just say, hey, I think it would be great if one major nuclear armed power wasn't invading another country, you will be attacked as a warmonger. Mm-hmm. All I want is no war. Let's be very clear about that, Ravana. So like there's so much Twitter brain out there that it makes, I think, regular people really, they do instinctively back off from these sorts of things.
Yeah, it's such a double-edged sword because if you just say, like you said, I think that war is bad, all of a sudden you're an imperialist. But and then if you do apply some sort of nuance to it, you're also an imperialist. Beating the drums of war. And if you acknowledge that there is, you know, people who will die if there is a war, then that's also you're a State Department propagandist. And that's just
best case scenario.
So divorced from reality and ridiculous.
I know, it's incredibly frustrating. Well, at the risk of being warmongers, I'm just gonna read facts about things that have happened. Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, said Tuesday that he does not expect an all-out war against Ukraine, but that he will put Ukraine on a war footing if there is a broad escalation from Russia. And again, he is a politician. Take everything he says with a grain of salt. Try through the lens of whatever knowledge you or I might have about Ukrainian politics and history to understand why he might be saying what he is. You don't have to like or accept any of his narratives or Biden's. Or Putin's, or probably best of all, any of them, actually. They all are liars because they're all humans and humans are liars. Anyway, there is a 30-day state of emergency subject to approval by parliament that would impose curfews and restrict mass gatherings in certain regions, quote, if necessary to confront increased Russian aggression. This is obviously a thing that could be used appropriately or could be used in other ways. So stick a little pin in the state of emergency there. They also say that a cyber attack earlier today hit Ukrainian government websites and banks, according to the country's digital minister, which might have happened, might not have. If it did happen, it could have happened. Who knows exactly who did it? I honestly don't. I'm simply saying they said it happened. I did not get these talking points from the CIA or the NRO or the NSA or anything else.
Well, that's only because you missed this morning's meeting, John. If you had been there at the State Department meeting with our CIA handlers.
Exactly. The whole thing is just so incredibly frustrating. Anyway, take a look at this map. It's a fun visual, everybody. Here is Ukraine. I'm just showing you a map. I am not showing you countries I want invaded. Or not, I'm just showing you a map. That's the region where this ongoing situation is happening. Don't at me. Anyway, okay, so that's, you know, and really, just very briefly, I'm curious, Ravana, your opinion. I obviously was wrong about this. I thought that there would be a lot of posturing on the Russian side that might help him domestically. I thought that there would be a ton of posturing from the Biden side that would be used to buy a whole bunch of weapons. And I thought that was pretty much about as far as it would go. That clearly is not where this is ending. Based on what you're seeing right now, where do you think this thing is developing in the short term?
I mean, I was in the same boat as you, so I don't necessarily trust my guesses what's gonna happen next either. But I definitely thought that it was just going to be posturing for a bit, you know, and then backing off because I didn't see it necessarily being in anyone's best interest to sort of advance because they don't really care about the human cost. These are countries who are looking out for their own geopolitical best interests as far as like move, but style for but.
Okay, hold for one minute, Ray. We seem to be having a little bit of internet trouble. What you need to understand is that both myself and Rayvana, we have a special intermediary filter between us that allows the CIA to approve of in real time the things that we're saying. That sometimes increases the latency. No, so we're having some sort of connection problems with Rayvana. We're gonna try to call back. Ray, you there?
I'm here. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no worries. That sounds much better. So anyway, you were saying.
Oh, I was just saying that, yeah, I don't necessarily think that there's going to be any sort of like American boots on the ground style intervention. But, you know, this this lethal aid that they're calling it will probably continue. And sanctions will, as Russia, if Russia becomes more aggressive, US sanctions will probably become more aggressive, which is something I would be concerned about is they start to, you know, be less targeted and less specific towards the elites and the military and start to trickle down and affecting the actual, you know, Russian civilians who this is not their fault. They don't deserve to be punished for the actions of their government.
Yeah. Who, overwhelmingly, I'm sure they do not support. Again, I'm just saying my opinion, back off. These aren't talking points with the CIA. Jeez, I know it's awesome. Invasions are the best anti-imperialist thing, is when one country invades another. It's awesome in anti-war. And the House Republicans say, this is what weakness on the world stage looks like. And look, if it was just the House Republicans, maybe we could just laugh that off. But multiple GOP accounts thought that this was like a major slam dunk. With Jake Schneider, part of the rapid response team for the GOP, tweeting, once again, Biden turns his back on the press and shuffles away in what has become the defining image of his failed presidency. Rayvana?
That's so dramatic. I love that this is, so you know how like liberal media outlets or other people in Congress will post pictures of Biden and Kamala walking in the White House towards a camera and they'll say like, this is what a real president looks like. This is what sound leadership looks like. This is just the flip side of that. It's just the Republican response to that. But I mean, it's just so entirely ridiculous. Like there are tons of times in Biden's presidency on the campaign trail where he has said something embarrassing or done something embarrassing that they could have shown. Instead, it's just like him leaving a room.
Well, look, it's a little bit nitpicky for them. But if we're going to talk about this, then I think we have to be fair. A true alpha male does not expose his kidneys to the enemy. He walks out of every room crab style, facing potential enemies. Alpha, have you ever seen Joe Rogan's back? We can't even prove that it exists because he would never expose it to the world. Anyway, if we're gonna talk about backs and if we're gonna talk about leaving the podium, because this is all that Biden did was turn and walk away, buddy, that's all. Okay, let's talk about how presidents walk away from things. Cue the video.
Very much.
It's a shame that when that original score is nominated for an Oscar, they won't be doing the award ceremony for that particular entry live. Anyway, yeah, look, it's just people walk away from things, Ray. That's what they do. You can make a joke out of anything.
I walked away from things several times in my life, at least. After this, I will stand up and walk away from this computer, and that will be the biggest failure of my embarrassing and horrendous career as doing political commentary. It's just so funny. Like, he didn't fall. There's a video of him falling, trying to get on a plane.
Yeah.
It's just him walking.
Trump walked away from the camera once with toilet paper stuck to his shoe. He couldn't fit an umbrella through a door, so he just let it like roll away down the tarmac. Like,
well, that's actually what you should do in that situation. You should just give up at that in that moment. If you can't Mary Poppins fly away with the umbrella, it's just do away with it.
Yeah, I think I would like to start an internet challenge where we show how true males, alpha males, walk away from things. I've already given you the definitive answer. I've taken it, the crab walk. But maybe like a series of combat roles, just
moonwalk
endless roles,
acceptable.
Like your Lincoln.
You moonwalk away from the podium.
Pretty cool. Maybe a little spin. Give it a twirl. You know, that's what George Costanza always wanted. Maybe you should just give it a twirl as you enter the room. Anyway. We're a ridiculous country. We deserve the bad things that happen to us.
Oh, yes.
By the way, with that then, let's turn now to the Michael Scott twirl. Oh yeah, Michael Scott twirled as well. I forgot, there's a lot of twirling going on TV. Anyway, you know, after Putin announced that he was going to be sending in his peacekeeping forces and Biden responded with sanctions, you know, anytime something like this happens, there's live news. Like the five is happening at that point. They have to opine and so, they did, and many of them said things like, you know, this is needlessly weak, that he's invited this aggression, like you have to be tough. Obviously, if it wasn't Biden, if it was Trump, it wouldn't be like this. Well, I like hypotheticals as much as the next person, but if they had just waited a little bit, they could have heard what Trump actually had to say about this foreign policy development. Here it is.
Concept of what he's doing. I went in yesterday and there was a television screen and I said, this is genius. Putin declares a big portion of the Ukraine, Putin declares it as independent. Oh, that's wonderful. So Putin is now saying it's independent, a large section of Ukraine. I said, how smart is that? And he's gonna go in and be a peacekeeper. That's the strongest peace force. We could use that on our southern border. That's the strongest peace force I've ever seen. There were more army tanks than I've ever seen. They're gonna keep peace all right. No, but think of it. Here's a guy who's very savvy. I know him very well, very, very well. By the way, this never would have happened with us. Had I been in office, not even thinkable. This would never have happened. But here's a guy that says, you know, I'm going to declare a big portion of Ukraine independent. He used the word independent. And we're going to go out and we're going to go in and we're going to help keep peace. You got to say that's pretty savvy. And you know what the response was from Biden? There was no response. They didn't have one for that. Now it's very sad, very sad.
Again, look, setting aside, of course, that it's not true. You can criticize Biden's response, but they had a response. They did do the sanctions they said they would do if the line was crossed. They labeled it invasion, whatever. Criticize the actual thing based on its content. Don't just lie and say there was no response. But that was Trump's response to what Putin did. I like it. Interesting moves. Pretty alpha, bro. Nice. I mean, I totally would have stopped it, Ray. I totally would have stopped it, but it was pretty cool and smart. He's a clever guy.
I love that. I love that he, within the same sentence, said, this never would have happened if I was president, but it's good and it's awesome. And I'm glad that it's happening. Like, if it's good, why would you have stopped it? If you think that it's good. And then of course he has to bring it back to, well, we could use these people on our southern border to keep peace. All of their, he's fantasizing about the weaponry they have. And he's like, to keep peace at our southern border. They're gonna go in, they're gonna keep peace with these massive weapons and tanks.
Well, I mean, look, remember, this is the guy that wanted the wall to be red hot so people would burn as they go over. And he wanted a moat with crocodiles in it and everything. Tanks are kind of humane compared to feeding people to ravenous predators. But anyway, so what would he do? If you're a conservative and you're watching this, every one of his backers say, if he was in office, this wouldn't happen. Trump just said it. You'll notice though, that they have not provided any example, even a vague example of what he would do to stop it. And so we are left to take the evidence available to us to try to speculate what would the different response be. So we know that Biden has said not to do it. Okay, so that's not what he would do because he would have a different response. Biden has put sanctions on Russia, the regions that were declared independent, Putin himself in his inner circle. So that's not what Trump would do because his response would be different. So if it's not meetings, diplomacy, vague rhetorical threats, sanctions, what would you do that would have stopped it? They keep implying violence. They say that they don't want it because they want to present themselves as anti-war or whatever, but they keep implying that there's something beyond diplomacy and sanctions that would have kept Putin from doing what he did. And yet so far, Ray, I have not heard a single example of what could have been done to stop this that, you know, the obviously savvy, wily Trump would have used.
Oh, he simply would have called Putin and said, "Hello, friend. I saw what you're doing and I think that maybe it's based, but you should stop because it looks bad." And Putin would have listened because they are very close friends, apparently. Now, I mean, it's, of course, there's no one has an answer because it's a ridiculous statement. And yeah, if there was an answer, they would give it, but they can't. So it's just vague, making vague statements about, you know, well, Trump would have done better somehow.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, the whole thing incredibly frustrating. Okay, so with that, we're going to launch into our first break. Please stick with us as we respond to some of your comments. And when we come back, we're going to give you an update on one of the worst potential additions to a terrible bill, the Don't Say Gay bill. Thankfully, this particular amendment has been stopped. So we're going to talk about that as well as give you our reactions to the McMichaels hate crimes conviction after this. Okay, everybody, let us see what is going on out there in the audience. Over on YouTube, Atticus Emerson has been a tier 2 member for 14 months, says, "Let's get after it." Thank you. It's too soon though. Chris Cuomo still is just, it's fresh, the wound. So let's not get after it, but we're glad to have you here. Peril the Polar Bear Dragon has been a tier 2 member for 8 months and says, "Thank you, John, for bringing me to TYT. Before the damage report, I was alone and surrounded by smooth-brained mouth breathers." Well, I spend a lot of time on Twitter, so I still feel like I am, but I'm glad that we have each other at least. Thank you for being a part of our community. Nicolette says, "I just wanted to say thank you for covering the shooting in PDX yesterday. We are so devastated by her loss. Motorcade kept us safe from people trying to run us over during protests, which they've tried." Yes, and so Nicolette is referring there to the individual who was killed by that right winger, had been doing a lot of great work trying to keep people protected, de-escalate conflict and those sorts of things. It is incredibly important work that is very rarely recognized. So thank you, Nicolette, for your message and for acknowledging that. Sorry for all that you and the community is going through. And by the way, on the main show yesterday, we talked about, of course, the insane coverage of that situation coming from people like Andy Ngo, who are disgusting, scavenging, craven grifters who go to these places and lie about the situation and lied about that particular shooting. Kept talking about how it's gonna turn out that this is an Antifa thing, Antifa was shooting at him, all that. Now the facts have been revealed, silence. Apparently his tongue has been Thanos'd. We can't get a single comment out of him about that because he's not a journalist. He's a propagandist, that's all it is. It's well paid work though. You know, credit to him for identifying an easy way to get paid. Jay Fergie says, "Skater Dragon here to request the post game replace the bye-bye wave with crab walk exits, pretty please, hi Ray." I will recommend it to them. We'll see if it happens. Emo Dragon says, "John, imperialist, the bomber jacket makes sense now." That is true. I've been trying to tell you my true colors with my attire for a long time. Look at this. I've got a vicious fire-breathing predator. You think I'm anti-war? Anyway, Moon Dragon says, "John, are you declaring yourself a peacemaker?" I get the reference. I haven't watched the show yet. Ray, are you a peacemaker fan?
I haven't seen it.
No, I haven't either. I gotta watch. Everyone says it's really good. Thank you, Moondragon. Okay, hold on. Ian Sutherland says, "There's a famous picture of Pierre Trudeau doing a pirouette behind the Queen. That can't be real. That cannot. We're gonna look it up, but it can't be real." Okay, thank you to all of you who contributed to the hype train. Much appreciated as always. And we are running low on time, but let me recognize some of our awesome members of our Twitch community, including Grazareth, who's been with us for 20 months and says, "As a European, I sincerely hope, despite being anti-militarist usually, that we the West will support Ukraine in every way we can, including militarily. We can't allow any nation to just annex sovereign territory. Well, Grazereth, at least as of right now, everything that Biden has said and that most of the foreign leaders have said indicates that that is not going to be the case. But thank you for your opinion and supporting us. To the people on Twitter, I just read that comment. It's not me. So don't DM me. By this point, I hope that you are familiar with Florida's Don't Say Gay bill, an incredibly controversial, hateful piece of legislation working its way through their system. Well, it was this close to being even more reprehensible than it will inevitably end up being, because there was an amendment proposed that would have required schools to inform parents of their children's sexual orientation within 6 weeks of learning that the student isn't straight. Because that's totally how, like, they love to pretend that they care about privacy and all that. And no, it's just you've got some, you know, like homophobic parents. Yeah, have fun with that. Now, thankfully, this amendment has been pulled. The entire bill hasn't been. There's still the bill, but this worst part has been pulled, which at least can be a reminder that if we raise concern about this horrendous stuff around the edges, at the very least, we can do some good. So we're gonna get into some more specifics about all this. But Rayvanna, what do you think about this legislation and the right wing's focus on LGBTQ youth?
Oh, I mean, I think it's horrifying and disgusting. I mean, they'll talk out of both sides of their mouth, right? They want small government, but they also want your student's public school teacher to be able to, you know, call up your parent and, you know, or call up a parent and tell the parent that their child is gay. Like, when it's, you know, maybe not something the child wanted to be shared with the parent, or honestly, something that I think the teachers really have any business knowing if it's not something the student has come out and, you know, felt comfortable disclosing to that teacher or some administrator or what have you. Yeah. It's just a huge overstep into privacy rights, because believe it or not, children do have privacy rights, even in school. You don't, you know, walk through the door and lose every single one of your rights. But I mean, yeah. Other than that, it's just a continued attack on the LGBTQ community, and it's under the guise of protecting children because it's something that people feel sympathetic to when all they're doing is harming children.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And I want to put a little bit of context to this additional amendment, and then we'll talk a little bit more about this the broader bill. But just in case you haven't been following the development, or if you're getting your news from outside of the U.S. or something, the bill bars educators in Florida from talking about sexual orientation or gender identity in primary schools. Parents would be able to take legal action against school districts they believe have violated the measure. So you might think, well, that's sort of a weird to have both of these things. So they can't talk about gender identity and sexual like orientation. So while the kids are growing up and developing, they should be left totally in the dark about all of this, never made to feel like this is a serious thing that they can be accepted in, that they can learn about. But at the same time, while the teachers can't talk about it, they should be finding out about the kid's sexual orientation and then snitching to their parents about it, which is a weird little twosome to have there. Now, the bill also said that if they feared that the reporting of the parents could lead to abuse, neglect, or abandonment, then they shouldn't do it, at least for a period of time. And that seems like sort of a weaseling out of what inevitably would happen from this. But look, I think in reality, Ray, I don't think most teachers would probably want to do this. There are certainly some hateful, terrible teachers, but I think most would not want to do this. Most of them would probably like to make the students feel accepted and loved and understood, but they're not going to be able to do that. And the mechanism for stopping them from doing that is what we've seen crop up in basically every bit of legislation the right wing has proposed over the last couple of years, which is we're not going to try to justify this. We're not going to make this something that would withstand judicial scrutiny. This is all going to be about Karenizing the population. You should be suing constantly about literally everything. Every word out of your teacher's mouth should be analyzed and dissected by every busybody parent. And they should constantly be afraid of being sued out of existence. At the individual level, that they could lose their career, the schools could be totally sued into oblivion. We're just seeing that all the time, Rayvanna.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree. I think that most teachers won't want to do this. I worked in education before I went to law school. You know, I know a lot of teachers, I know a lot of educators. I fortunately don't know any that I think would jump on the bandwagon and want to do this. But you know, you're right. It does create almost a mandatory you know, it sort of mandates that they have to do this lest the school continuously be sued or the teacher themselves continuously be sued. But I also think that a broader issue, and I'm glad this amendment was pulled, but it only creates sort of an escape for students who might be abused, neglected, or abandoned by their parents. But there are so many other things that can happen. Because, you know, a parent might be homophobic, and that doesn't mean that they're going to abuse or neglect or abandon their child, but it will make that child's life much more difficult. Just because it doesn't meet the legal definitions of those terms doesn't mean that that's not going to be, you know, seriously harmful to that child who, you know, has chosen not to disclose that information to their parent for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And in most cases, how would they know? Like, unless the kid has made clear, in an environment where we're not going to allow any conversation about any of this, unless the kid has made clear that, oh no, they're going to boot me to the curb if they find out, then unless you've been told that, go ahead and tell them. Again, this is not the role that teachers are supposed to be playing in these kids' lives. And the idea, they are trying to pitch this as being about protecting our kids. Protecting them from understanding, from education, from acceptance, and opening them up to abuse and fear and neglect and all that is just absolutely absurd. And again, like, all, like, they don't care. The people who are pushing this, and we're gonna show you some video in a second, they don't care about this. This is a very convenient piece of meat to throw to the piranha. That's all it is, because they know that there are parents that would love to be this involved. Like, PTA meetings didn't get bad 2 years ago, they were already bad. Now they've just been drafted into the never-ending, constantly evolving culture war. And if you're a right-winger that is watching this, I understand that when some, I'm not gonna swear, when some Republican politician in Florida puts forward a bill like this, you think, oh good, they're finally hearing me. They're thinking about me. I've been lost and forgotten for so long. They finally understand me. No, this is a distraction. It might be a distraction that you are passionate about, but it is a distraction. Because they do not want to address the actual material condition of your life. They're not going to acknowledge that, and you're not going to acknowledge those issues if you have been spun into insanity through legislation like this and being drafted to constantly go to these meetings, obsess over every single thing that a teacher says, to sue them if an opportunity opens up. None of this is about making your life better.
Children in kindergarten do not need to hear about 100 different sexual orientations, sexual preferences in reality, and gender identities.
Our children are not and should not be part of a social experiment.
This can only be known as indoctrination.
Should teachers tell children, pick a gender, any gender, you'll be happy? Do we say lie, cheat, kill, steal, you'll be happy?
And LGBTQ issues. Children can be traumatized by these non-biblical issues.
I can tell you what's inappropriate. It's a man in a Speedo talking about sex to class, or a drag queen coming into an elementary school.
That, I don't live in Florida, Ray. Is that common? I like to admit my ignorance. I am not an expert on NMLBJ.
The NLRB issues. Q plus issues. Yeah, no, I mean, it's absolutely absurd. One, the idea that children in kindergarten are being taught sex education in any capacity, or that was ever on the table specifically in a state like Florida, is absolutely absurd. Like, there is a push to teach comprehensive sex education that begins with teaching consent in kindergarten, because consent is important outside of a sexual context for children to learn. And it's important that they be able to identify, you know, the technical terminology for their body parts in the event that something horrific happens to them and they need to convey that. But what the idea that there's people in Speedos coming in and teaching sex education, I mean, for God's sakes, my high school sex ed class, my teacher was just a volleyball coach, and he told the class to have, you know, protected sex and protected oral sex. And someone raised their hand, and when they asked, how do you have protected oral sex? The teacher's response was to say, I don't know, I guess you could wear a condom. Like, that's the type of sex education that's happening in schools. It is nothing like this fantasy that they've created to be upset about.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and of course you're gonna have, like, there was the woman with the, this is unbiblical. Well, sorry. Did you think that you were coming to a meeting where, like, you're gonna be like advising your minister or something? No, this is a public school. That's not supposed to be about the Bible. There are churches, you can go to those. But no, the whole thing is it's absolutely absurd. But this is a reminder to the audience of why this war is so difficult. It is way easier to get people fired up about stuff like this, activating their lizard brain parts of their head, than it is to convince people that, hey, maybe empathy is good. Maybe caring about people other than yourself, other than people that might look like you, is good. The world can become a better place if we fight towards that. That is an important war to wage. We're trying to do it, but it is inherently much more difficult, especially when the side that is trying to stoke fear and suspicion, hatred, jealousy, weird lust against the other side is also far, far better funded. Anyway, okay. With that said, we're gonna move on to our next topic. And man, this hour is rapidly running by. Let's jump into this video.
One should fear that if they go out for a run, they will be targeted and killed because of the color of their skin. The Justice Department has a legal obligation to prosecute hate crimes. And as Americans, all of us have a moral obligation to combat the hatred and bigotry that motivates those crimes.
In that video, you see Merrick Garland finally doing a day's work. That's good, nothing else for him to be investigating. Announcing that the three white Georgia men who murdered Ahmaud Arbery have been found guilty of a federal hate crime, determining that the crime was motivated explicitly by racism. This follows up previous charges and all that. But it does mean that there's a little bit of resiliency against some of the charges being overturned, that sort of thing, and makes it even more likely that they will be spending a very long time, potentially the rest of their life, in prison. We'll give you more details, but Ray, what do we make of this?
Yeah, I think it's a really good thing. I think that we should see more of this because it's extremely uncommon. Hate crimes are not prosecuted very often because, you know, there's a lack of judicial resources, or it's a strain on the judicial system. So they only go after, you know, things that they think are surefire, you know, hate crime cases, and sort of a lot of these other things that were absolutely hate crimes are left by the wayside. So, but it's good to see it actually, you know, working the way that it's supposed to in this case, because it was such a blatant, disgusting, horrendous act of hate.
Yeah, the actual act horrendous, the fraught extended path to getting justice in the case, also scary. We'll give you those numbers, but Ravana rightfully alluded to the fact that they don't often pursue these sorts of charges. In fact, the DOJ between 2005 and 2019 pursued just 17% of the hate crime incidents it was presented with. That doesn't mean that the DOJ or the people they'd be putting in charge don't think that the others might be instances of hate crimes, but obviously it's difficult. This is America after all. And so in any event, that is certainly good news. I will remind you, as I alluded to earlier, that prosecutors didn't charge the men until more than 10 weeks after they'd murdered Ahmaud Arbery. And this is one of many cases where if that video had not come out, totally different outcome. These guys would be off stalking other people throughout their neighborhood right now. And so we are constantly reminded that having video, body cam footage, stuff like that does not guarantee justice. Nothing even close to it. There are a lot of juries that can look at an obvious, very clear case of murder, and what do you know, they end up siding with the cops. But sometimes it does provide an opportunity. And so at the very least here, we had that.
Yeah, and it just does make you worry, you know, or sit and think about all of the, you know, countless victims of hate crimes and the families of the victims of hate crimes who have been seeking and fighting for justice for themselves or for their loved ones who weren't able to obtain it because maybe it wasn't as, you know, didn't catch people's attention the same way that, you know, the people fighting and demanding justice for Ahmaud Arbery, you know, was able to gain traction and sort of become viral. So, you know, there's tons of victims, and, you know, unfortunately for people who have been murdered, you know, families of victims who are fighting for that same justice and will, you know, might not ever see it because our judicial system isn't created to be just. It isn't created to have some form of justice, and, you know, particularly for people of color and other underrepresented groups who are the victims of hate crimes.
Exactly. Yeah, and as many people are noting both in the chat and in our document, today is 2 years to the day that the murder actually happened. So, you know, symbolically too important to get that conviction there. And I realize I didn't actually say what the sentence was. They now face up to life in prison for the federal crimes, as well as the life sentences they received in state court previously. So again, we'll have to see exactly how that sentencing process goes, but it does look like that's probably it for them, which is justice. Okay, with that, we are gonna take our second break. When we come back though, who's actually still paying attention to the news, to what's going on politically? We've got those numbers for you after this. Okay, everybody, let's see what you all have been up to. New Moon JLP says, if this garbage bill goes through, we will see teen suicide rates skyrocket in Florida. Absolutely devastating. By the way, we have a sort of related story that was just breaking right before we went live about Texas and investigating the parents of trans youth. We'll have the details for you about that tomorrow. It's not to say that it used to be great in these issues. And man, back in 2005, the right never weaponized culture war topics. That is not actually the case. They have always been reprehensible. It just keeps going, and we have to be vigilant. Layu has been a tier 2 member on YouTube for 14 months and says, power bottom dragon. What happens if a teacher just minds their own business and pretends not to know? Can they still be sued? Ray, I heart you. John, you're great.
Oh,
hearts.
Thank you, power bottom dragon.
Can they still be sued? Great question. I'm not exactly sure actually how they would adjudicate that. But remember, the lawsuit is the worst potential thing that could happen. But the idea is that there's gonna be constant surveillance now on them. Like the parents are gonna be constantly watching. They're gonna be asking the kids to rat out the teachers. Like that already exists for a long time. The right has been trying to put together these like conservative groups where they have students go in college campuses and rat out anyone that they think they can pin as being too left or something. So now it's just moving to kindergarten as well. Dusty Jones, welcome as well. Thank you for being part of the community. Dusty Jones also sent in a super chat saying, again, as a future parent, I will always protect my kids. Even if they become transgender, it's important for them to understand that they'll always be loved and be equal. These evil people need to go away. But they don't. And they have a lot of kids. Anyway, Angie Baby says, well, it's not my fault your generation did such a crap job raising my parents who raised me to be happy and love myself because you messed them up so bad. I think that's a response to Ron DeSantis. I think. Thank you. Matthias says, lizard brains, John, we are dragons. Don't go there, LOL. Well, no, dragons are noble creatures far above the base lizards that dwell in the dirt and muck. We all know that following a big presidential election, a lot of people tune out of the news. Well, boy, have people tuned out in the time between the 2020 election and now, but not equally. Importantly, we're gonna look at some numbers coming from a new poll from Gallup and the Knight Foundation. This is the percentage of Americans who pay, quote, a great deal of attention to the news by political affiliation. And you can see there, assuming you're not on mobile, in which case RIP, that the blue line, the Democrats who have paid a great deal of attention to the news, has dropped from something like 70% down to 34, actually dropping below the Republican numbers, which are also down, but only by a few percentage points. Independents as well have to some extent checked out. They had reached sort of a high, partway through the pandemic of nearly 50%, that's down to 29%. So everybody's numbers are down. The Democrats are down the most. And so Ray, what do you think about this? How does this potentially affect the job that we have to do as news analysts and broadcasters to get people invested in all this stuff?
Yeah, I think it doesn't surprise me. And something that I sort of like try to remind people as they get very bogged down in like sort of not the news that's being spoken by, political analysts, but like some inter-political analyst drama that, no one really cares about this. Most people aren't even consuming the news. You have to do a lot to get people to pay attention. And I'm not saying that that's like a bad quality in people. The news is horrendous. It's hard to pay attention to, especially if you are on the side of the issues that's correct. If you believe in climate change, The news is hard to watch if you care about criminal justice reform. The news is hard to watch. And it's a lot easier for people to just disassociate, which is why I think, you know, it's really good to do community organizing and build sort of, you know, inter-community awareness of issues and on the ground fighting. Because some of those people who don't pay attention to mainstream news or consume news like that, you know, can be brought into those issues to care about those issues and fight for it in a meaningful way.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great strategy, by the way. If you start to feel yourself being pushed out or burnt out, there might be areas of this whole thing. It's a multifaceted battle, multi-level battle. There might be areas that you can, you know, sustain yourself, investing in. And as a quick aside, as I always say, you know, in response to what Ray said, it is difficult. It's difficult following the news. It's difficult talking about the news. If you need to take time off, you should. You should. Sometimes people will send super chats and be like, hey, I'm sorry I haven't watched in a few months. You don't be sorry. Like, I'm glad to have you back. I want you to watch. But if you need to take time off, take time off. It's rough. I understand that. That's why we try to have fun. Obviously, the stuff that we're talking about, the stakes are as high as they could be. But it is difficult. Now, there's a few interesting things about this. One, the fact that Democrats have dropped so much, again, I agree with Ray. I'm not super surprised by that. There's a few good reasons for that. You're going to be more invested when the opposition is in charge, potentially. And so that poll that we showed you only goes back to like 2018. So who knows what that looked like in the late Obama years or anything like that. So it's going to drop a little bit after the election. Elections are high stakes affairs. You're super invested in it. The pandemic has been really wearing on people, I think. And the big drop has largely happened during 2021. So what happened in regards to like Biden? He's in charge now. The Democrats are in charge. What happened throughout 2021? Basically nothing. Like, you could, I hope you stayed invested in the fight to try to get Manchin and Sinema to do right. But there wasn't a lot of great sustaining news. Maybe you would have had a spike if he had canceled student loan debt or, you know, accomplished any of his other goals and promises that he said he would. But I'm sort of surprised that one out of three Democrats is still paying a great deal of attention to the news, considering how horrific and in some areas non-eventful the news has been.
I think that one thing that, you know, the Democrats should take away from this is they need to stop being so obsessed with what the news says about them. Because it, like, if you just look at this, Democrats aren't really paying attention. Democratic voters aren't paying attention to the news. They have this hyperfixation on what's being printed about them and what the CNN and MSNBC analysts are going to say about them. I mean, I know people who worked for Adam Schiff, and they said that one of the first things he would do every day was have someone drop off at his office a stack of like newspapers or printouts of like the headlines and what the pundits are saying in response to what the Democrats are thinking about possibly maybe in the future doing. And it's that sort of obsession that prevents actual action, because what's being printed by the pundits does not actually translate into what the voters care about or what the voters think about, especially if they're not even consuming that media. So the way that they sort of use those headlines and what the news pundits who are sort of entrenched in Beltway thinking are going to say about it as a deciding factor in whether or not to pursue legislation and policy goals is just, it's an outdated way of doing things, and it's absurd, and they need to move away from it.
Yeah, no, I agree. A few other random thoughts. One, you know, polls like this, you always have to sort of question little bits of it. So what does a great deal of attention mean? What does news mean? What are you including? What are you not including potentially? Both from the pollster's point of view and the individual respondents. There's all sorts of news. Some people pay a lot of attention to sports news. That is news. It's also, it's different than political news. Also, as you saw from the end of 2020 to now, the all news numbers have dropped, but Republicans least of all. Independents have dropped off by a good chunk, actually. Like, that's like a 50% drop there. Democrats by even more. And by the way, remember, like, Democrat here can mean a lot of things. It can incorporate a lot. Like, I would be classified as a Democrat, even though I despise Democrats, obviously. So with the Democrat and independent numbers dropping down and the Republican numbers staying kind of not shallow, a little bit down, but not too bad. If you've noticed some people shifting in their rhetoric, the issues that they focus on, there might be a profit seeking reason for it as people dropped off throughout 2021. I'm not saying anything. The numbers are just saying something.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.